Hello and welcome to the NACA podcast. I'm Doug Church from the NACA National Office in Washington, D.C. By September 15th, 2020, 6 months into the COVID-19 pandemic, air carrier traffic volume was greatly reduced, presenting opportunities for many GA pilots and students with their instructors to do takeoffs and landings at major airports. One such flight, a Mooney M20, piloted by a student with an instructor, departed runway 1 right at Washington Dulles International Airport. Just a short time later, as the Mooney was at 4,600 feet, the aircraft suffered a total engine failure. The choice to be near IAD turned out to be a most advantageous decision. Potomac TRACON member Joe Mash talked with the pilot and worked with fellow Potomac members Jason Dunaway and Chris Rhodes to help the flight return safely to Dulles. They will be honored with the Eastern Region Archie League Medal of Safety Award on June 17th in New Orleans. Here's my conversation with Joe and Jason. Hey, let me start by just asking you about your background real briefly. Jason, I know you told me that you're getting ready to transfer to Houston. How long have you been at Potomac TRACON?
I've been at Potomac since 2016. Yeah, wait, 2015.
Okay. Where'd you work before then?
Salt Lake, but I actually left the agency in 06, and I spent some time outside of the agency doing other things. So I've been around this game since 93. I've been doing this a long time.
How did you get involved in the profession, Jason?
The Marine Corps. I joined the Marine Corps when I was out of high school and basically just lucked into the career field. They were like, here, do this. I'm like, okay. And it definitely worked out.
Joe, how about yourself? How long have you been at Potomac?
I've been at Potomac since the end of 06. I was hired September 11th of 2006. And I was started out in the Chesapeake area. I've been in the Shenandoah area since 2014. I think I was wrapping up training when Jason transferred in. So we were kind of going through training together there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Obviously, September of 2020, just 6 months into the pandemic, set the scene for me, if you will, as far as the facility and staffing and traffic levels and how that played into your ability to deal with this emergency. And
this is Jason. I think what, Joe, we probably just came off of 5-10 schedule. We were just starting like a 5-5, I think, around that point. Right.
Yeah, so, it sounded like we had maybe three sectors open plus a CIC. So I'm guessing we had just came back to maybe 5-on, 5-off.
Yeah, we were doing some creative configurations to keep the operation afloat to begin with. I mean, combining sectors that you would never combine them in that way. Skeleton crews, you know, 5 or 6 of us running the area when normally it takes a minimum of 9. If it gets busy at all, talking 12, 13 people to run the area, and we were doing it with 6. Hmm.
Was this the first emergency that you dealt with during the pandemic time?
I think. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, this is Joe. That was the first one that I recall during the pandemic. But, you know, we were there so few. I can't really – we were just commenting yesterday. Like, I don't even think that either of us can remember the configuration of the room that day. Like, I know that I was on departures. I don't know what else I was working. I don't know. We can't remember where each other were working. And what all sectors we had, because it was such an unusual traffic situation. You know, there was a lot of GA traffic, so we had a lot of satellite stuff. We had a lot of overflight stuff during the day, but like we wouldn't have a lot of normal airline stuff. So we would just split up stuff very differently than normal. And it just happened to work out that day. I remember being not feeling very busy. But, you know, I can't recall really what was going on around us, but, you know, just definitely skeleton crews. We were not a lot of us there that day for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, when this originally came up, when our Amy told us that we had won this award, Chris Rhodes actually thought that it was involving an incident with a helicopter where a helicopter made a forced landing. I think that was a few months later. And a helicopter made a forced landing out in some field out in the southwest part of our airspace. And like we swore up and down it was that. Like it just kind of all that time frame definitely just runs together.
Sure. Let me ask you this. We're talking the aircraft that was involved in this particular emergency was a Mooney. How unusual or not was it that this particular aircraft was departing Dulles on this particular day? Is that a usual thing for this particular aircraft or that type of aircraft? Or was it just because the Dulles was certainly not as busy at that time?
I'll take that. This is Joe. I think because of the COVID schedule, because that lack of airline schedule, I think this was like a nationwide thing. I think people were taking their GA airplanes to places they only dreamed of going. And this was a good example. It was an instructor and a student that owned the airplane, and they took it to Dulles, in and out just for a fun flight. And I mean, weirdly enough, it happened at a great time. It couldn't have happened at a better time or a better place, for sure. Lucky for them. But yeah, we were getting all kinds of things. When you say Jason, I mean, we were working, Cessnas would come in and do touch and goes on all four runways at Dulles and then head back out somewhere. I mean, it was just a weird time. For sure.
Let's go through the event then, step by step, from what you recall, and we want to get your side of what occurred, what you saw, what you did. I guess I would begin with positions that you had and what you were responsible for, and then kind of take me through this particular emergency and how it obviously it was an engine failure and it happened pretty abruptly. Take us through what happened. If you want to, doesn't matter to me which one of you wants to start.
I'll let Joe go first because Joe was definitely the Joe was the Tom Cruise in this one.
Yeah. So I think I don't know how long I've been sitting down. It seems like I hadn't been there very long. Maybe half hour at the most. And I think I only had the departures. So we have two departures off Dulles. Northerly, I mean, it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's I'm pretty sure that's all I had. And not a lot going on. I remember listening to the tapes. The tower was calling me, coordinating just random headings. I mean, it was not very busy at all. The Mooney came off northbound and with the SFRA, it didn't have a destination in there. And I remember just asking them, you know, their on-course heading and what altitude they wanted and reference a couple of Dulles departures. I eventually got them turned on course and up to altitude. And Dulles had rolled a northbound departure off runway 30. And when he came airborne, I climbed him up to 3,500, like 1,000 feet below the Mooney. And okay. Turned him northbound on course. And it was about that time that the Mooney, I think he even said pan, or he did clear one of those emergency phrases and was saying a complete engine failure. And I was just thinking to myself, as a man, like, this is like the worst timing. I just turned the air shuttle commercial jet northbound right at the guy. So that was my first move, was kind of just to stop the air shuttle's climb and turn him westbound just to kind of get him out of the way. And just to give the Mooney, you know, the right of way and direct shot towards Dulles. And that's what I went back and told him, you know, direct Dulles, do whatever you need to do, any runway you want. And he elected, he first kind of stuttered and he was going to go to 12 and then he elected to go to 19 center. Cause I think he was close enough and he had enough altitude and had enough time to kind of make it as normal as you want. Like you want as a pilot to make that approach to landing as normal as you can. So once he decided on 19 center, I called the tower and like I said, I don't remember Jason's seat during that time, but I remember there's nothing on the landmines that was coordinated, but those guys between Jason and Chris, it's that instinct you have, I think, as an air traffic controller where you hear somebody saying something and it perks your attention. And I think those guys knew immediately what was going on and they just cleared the final. They coordinated with Dulles. They broke out who they needed to break out. And then I was coordinating with Dulles Tower, ended up clearing the guy to land and basically like that. But yeah, that was kind of it.
Jason?
I mean, I actually had all the feeders, the south feeder sectors, and the west feeder, the south and west satellite area, and the finals all combined up. So I probably had, I don't know, six or seven frequencies I had combined up. A few Dulles arrivals, some satellite stuff, SFRA, just all that stuff going on. And you catch something, you hear something, and it's like, I mean, the whole thing lasted less than a minute, you know? But so there's a lot of times there isn't time for coordination with something like that. So I had airplanes pointed all at the airport, going to different runways, and just started pushing airplanes around to, you know, switching their runways on short notice. I had like five or six Dulles arrivals kind of into a base feed configuration to land. Several of them were set up to land one center, which would then have been opposite direction to where the Mooney needed to go. So I pushed those guys over to one right, and then got them pushed out of the way and held some traffic out until we knew this guy was going to land. And it just, it happened quick. You know, it's just one of those instances where you just kind of, you gotta be aware of what's going on around you in the room, or you're going to miss big stuff like this.
Yeah, thank you for that. I don't know if you saw this, but the part of the nomination material that came in was the statement from the pilot. Had you read that before? If you haven't, I'll forward it to you after this call. And I didn't read it before this morning. I didn't even know there was one. As I was looking at the materials an hour ago, and I noticed it. And the one thing I'll ask you about right now is, he says, if I could have done anything different, I would have done two things. Number one, when I teach my students about engine failures, I say to circle your touchdown point to lose altitude and set up for a normal landing. I opted for the non-standard approach due to the busy nature of the airport and the quantity of nearby buildings. I didn't want to circle around it. Additionally, I was not sure if I was on fire, and the excess airspeed was helpful for that. I knew I had plenty of runway to burn my energy over, which worked well. But if I could change anything, I would have made a circling descent. So hearing that, does that make anything more clear as to the approach that he did take to try and land? Were you surprised that he chose what he chose, or did you understand in real time what he was trying to do?
I didn't honestly even think about it. I knew he was probably 6 or 7 miles maximum from the airport at 4,500 feet. So I was figuring he had about 5 or 6 miles to fly. So when he elected to base to 19 center, I figured that was because he felt he was probably a little too high to land straight in on runway 12. But yeah, I think as a pilot too, I think he knew that he had 2 miles of runway on 19 center. So the little bit of energy he had was probably worth taking it straight in and not delaying around, but.
Okay.
Yeah. I had not heard his comments though before today.
Did he have any passengers or just himself?
It was an instructor with the owner of the Mooney. So the owner of the Mooney was with an instructor. Yeah.
Okay. Have you had a chance to talk with him or meet him afterward or yet? Or
no, I think once I learned about this Archie, I had reached out on, gosh, I feel like somebody did a video of it, and there was a comment on there. He had reached out to somebody from Potomac, and I had noticed that nobody had written him back. But we tried to exchange emails, and I have not gotten an email back though.
Okay.
Because I was going to ask his take on it. Yeah. Honestly, yeah.
I'll forward you what he wrote so you guys can read that. Well, hey, I want to tie this up. We've been on the phone for more than 20 minutes, and I'd love to get each of your thoughts about winning this award and what that means to you at this stage of, you know, of your careers. You've been around a long time, and I know dealt with other emergencies, I'm sure. What does this mean to you? And you know, start with Joe.
I mean, it honestly, as cliche as it sounds, I am a firm believer, like, you know, it is a job, and we show up every day, and for the one emergency that we get recognized for, there's five or six or a dozen that we may ever never get recognized for. But I mean, you know, it means a lot to be nominated. It means a lot to win. But I don't think we did anything above and beyond, honestly. I think Jason and I would do this time and time again. I think, and you know, we just always hope for the same result. It was a good outcome. Thank goodness for that. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely honored to be a part of it. But yeah, I think it's just another day on the job.
Thank you. Jason?
Actually, I would probably really echo Joe's sentiments there. You know, when Chris brought up the incident with the helicopter, I mean, just as an example of what happens routinely in this job, you know, a helicopter made a forced landing, a military helicopter made a forced landing in some fields out southwest of Culpeper, and the area came together to find a law enforcement helicopter and veteran to the scene and get them on scene to make sure the crew was okay. And all these things, you know, and that happened. I think Chris was talking to that helicopter for seconds before they made the decision to go into this field. They lost all their power, and then he lost radar and radios with them. And and he vectored a helicopter in to, they said, within half a mile of where the helicopter went in at. And thank goodness, you know, everybody was okay. The crew, it was a soft landing and the crew walked away from that. But, I mean, you know, Joe's been doing this a while. I've been doing this a long time. And, you know, these emergencies happen. And quite often, it's just a matter of somebody like our safety rep catching it or seeing a write-up from a pilot, being thankful and submitting it. I mean, we're surrounded by unsung professionals. You know, every day people are doing stuff like this around the country and not being recognized for it. You know, it's definitely a big part of the job. It's pretty cool to get recognized for something like this. But I mean, I've got pretty close to 30 years of experience in this job, and I've actually done bigger things than this. If as egotistical as that almost sounds, like, I've had incidents happen, you know, that were way above and beyond this, and then you're still plugged in for an hour and a half afterwards, moving airplanes, you know. So, yeah. But it's definitely an honor, and it's definitely very cool.
That's yeah, this is Joe, to circle back. So I was listening to the tapes again last night, and it didn't dawn on me during all this, but like, as soon as I listened to the tapes, I hear that student pilot chiming in, and I remember she was chirping at me the whole time this was kind of going on. And, you know, right after this Mooney's on shore final, no engine, oil all over, unsure how it's going to play out. The student pilot calls up, who is, you know, I mean, not an emergency, but I just kind of caught myself going right back to him and just doing my everyday job. And that's kind of just, I think a lot of people, this, we're all in the same boat, you know what I mean? Just a job to us. I love it.
Good. Thank you both. Is there anything else that I didn't ask about that you want to add about the event, or anything else related to it, or did we cover everything there?
I'm honestly just shocked Joe hasn't told you he's a Riddle grad yet.
Go Eagles, baby.
Save the best for last.
I promised I would rib him at some point in here. So.
Yeah.
Well, good. Thank you again for your time. I know it's a busy day and a busy time, and thank you and congratulations to you both. And
yeah, cool. Thanks, Doug. Cool.
Take care. Thanks, Doug. Have a great day.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.